Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is Thursday. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I'm your host of the show, sitting across the studio, finally, after a hiatus of, I don't know, three, four weeks, Bobby Jean Bell.
Good to be back, and so great to see you.
Oh, I know. It's last week, it was like I was home.
Oh, you know, and you look so good.
Oh,
you're out of the hospital.
I'm out of the hospital.
The bionic man.
I have my bionic hip. And it's actually working pretty good. So
good to see you back, Jim.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's great to be here. Hey, let's start off by letting us know who is your guest on your concert series.
We have Carrie Grumbacher coming in from New Orleans, and Carrie is a singer-songwriter, a little bit of Western music, a little bit of New Orleans spice, great fun, great storyteller, musician. He will be with us October 27th, the next of the Out West concert series, and tickets are available, and if you say you heard about it on The Writer's Block, we'll give you a $5 discount, 661-347-9700 to make your reservations.
Hey, do you only run those through October?
Actually, November 17th will be the last That's a gentleman named Dennis J. coming out of Texas. And that will complete our year.
And then you're not back in again until April?
Well, we're debating about 2017. We never know year to year. It's about this time of the year that we begin conversations with the venue, with our great partner, SCV-TV, who comes in and films and such. And so we don't really have anything to reveal yet about 2017. Mm-hmm. We'll see. You'll be the first to know.
Well, our audience certainly will be the first or the second to know. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley. Really nice folks. They'll do a nice job for people who are really not associated or know anything about publishing or how to get a book done, and that's what they're there for. The number there, if you want to talk to them, is 805-795-3165. It's also brought to you by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. And Bobby, what's that number?
661-347-9700 and online at www.scvoutwest.com.
There you go. And by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In fact, I just had breakfast with Mike yesterday morning.
You did.
I did. He's in Albuquerque this afternoon, and then he had to go back to Pittsburgh. So, unfortunately, he was not able to hang out. But, as you know, we mention Target Freight every week, and we do because they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? Call today, 844-653-7789, and tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block. They'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, which means less than truckload, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry. And I had a great breakfast with him yesterday morning. We had a great time. We were down at the Cactus Patch in Moore Park.
Oh.
Fun place. And it's really cowboy.
Is it
there.
Really?
Yeah, it's like totally cowboy.
Have they been there a long time?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the people that own it are really nice folks. And they have inside seating. You go out and have a little patio up front.
Nice.
And it's right on High Street. It's right in the heart of old downtown Moore Park. I mean, it's right over by the Moore Park Melodrama. And, yeah, it's a really nice little place. So.
Very fun.
That being said, we're waiting right now for Henry to call in. So, Henry, if you're listening, put on your headphones, dial your phone, and we may answer it for you. Or not. But as we go on, we have a guest. Actually, last week's guest was so much fun. Ken LaSalle.
Yes, Ken LaSalle was back, and it was a great show.
We had so much fun. And, you know, we got into stuff that we never really should have gotten into.
You did. Yes, it was like two old chums sitting together over a brew and having a good old time.
Yep. And guess who's calling in?
Henry Park.
Henry Park, is that you?
Oh no, did we lose Henry?
Not again. Henry, is that you?
I hear laughter.
Henry?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, what do you say?
Hey, it's so great to be back with you guys, and everyone is there, and everyone has all their parts functioning. Congratulations on the bionic hip.
Well, you know, the last time you called in, I think you called in after I did, and I don't remember calling in, kind of. I had to listen to the show. I was really on my lips, and I have to apologize again for that.
But no, it was surreal, but it was fun.
Well, it was reality radio.
It was. It totally.
That's right. No filter.
There you go. Oh, none at all. None at all. So talk to us, Henry. What do you got?
Well, you know, for the 7 years that I've been writing Henry's Western Roundup, its appearance has been pretty reliable, a day or two late sometimes, but rarely. Well, it's been well over a month since I posted, and I've started getting messages from folks worrying about my health. So let me assure your listeners, my readers, nothing is wrong. The fact is, in addition to my monthly Western film column in True West, they've been assigning me several additional articles, and so I've just had to back off from the roundup until I could catch up. But I'm going to definitely be back on the roundup this Sunday, and I'm going to try and keep on schedule again. And I'm going to be reviewing a really fine Western novel, Shadow of the Hawk, by Ron Hontanner, who not only wrote for Gunsmoke, but was associate producer on the series for its final 5 seasons. And I'm going to have an interview with him coming up very soon.
Great.
I'm going to be reviewing some new spaghetti Western movie releases from the Wild East Productions. And I've got a really interesting silent Western from Alpha Video called Before the White Man Came. This is from the early 20s and features an all-Indian cast.
Wow. That was revolutionary for 1920s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it still is now, really.
Yeah, exactly.
When you look at Westerns today, we certainly have many more Indians playing Indians, but it's still not 100%. And I'll be weighing in on the Magnificent Seven and the new Westworld. As a matter of fact, if you'd like an in-depth look at what's wrong with the Magnificent Seven remake, there I tipped it, please check out my article of the November issue of True West, which is on newsstands now.
Great.
All righty then.
Yeah. And Jim, I've got to thank you for turning me onto this, because it had slipped under my radar.
What's that?
But I've got information about the upcoming AMC Western series, The Sun, starring Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Oh.
Yes, it really looks interesting. It's about the birth of a Texas oil empire.
Right.
And, you know, AMC's standards for Westerns have been so high, from Broken Trail to Hell on Wheels, so I'm hugely excited about this one.
Yeah, well, it looked to be really, really good. And, I just you catch stuff like that sometimes in the periphery of magazines and, you know, as you're thumbing through stuff, and it just grabs your attention.
Do you know, Henry, about the new Gene Autry CD that comes out November 18th?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Carla Buhlman just posted this on the official GeneAutry.com website. It's called Gene Autry, A Melody Ranch Christmas. There's a great write-up about it, of course, and a cover of the CD, and it sounds really, really fun. Take a look at that, and I'm sure, you know, you'll want to cover that as you come into holiday.
Oh, I sure
so
will.
Thank you for telling me. A little tip for you, yes.
Should make a great gift for somebody who is a Western aficionado like yourself, Henry.
And that's right. Raise your hands.
Yeah.
And need I say, you can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
And you did it. Congratulations. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, Henry.
I can't wait. It's great to have you all back.
Oh, we're really happy to be back, and it's great to hear your voice, my friend.
Terrific. You guys take care. Can't wait to hear the rest of the show.
Oh, well, enjoy, because it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a good one.
Strap in, put on your seatbelt.
There you go. That kind of gives you an idea. We're winged Pegasus in here. Ooh, that's good.
Ooh, that is good. Write that down.
Okay, Henry, we'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
All righty. Bye-bye. Okay. We have with us this evening a gentleman who learned to fly at age 17, and by 18 he was published at Aviation World. This guy's like a go-getter.
Yeah.
Success came right quickly for him, and he's been flying jets since he was 20 years old. Whether flying for a Saudi sheik, nighttime freight, or executives of a Fortune 500 company, Philip Donnelly has logged over, I don't know if this is true, logged over 6 million, that's a lot of
that's
miles.
That's a lot of miles.
6 million miles. Now, this is his bio. He wrote this. So, Phil, if you're listening, this is why.
Well, he has to be a little older than 20 now.
Well, yeah. He's, he's like younger than I am.
Okay.
Okay. While spanning the globe, Donnelly burst into the literary scene in 2004 with the publication of his first novel, Category 5, followed by Code Black, Zero Separation, Deadly Echoes, Aftershock, his sixth novel, Pegasus Down, which we have just finished reading, and his newest one, which is due out in, what do you say, March?
March of next year.
Which is, Bobby?
You have that? Seconds to Midnight.
Seconds to Midnight, also a part of the series. He is an avid fly fisherman. He spends his time between Montana and the Pacific Northwest. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Philip Donnelly. Philly with us.
I'm right here.
All righty.
Welcome aboard.
Yes.
I was feeling a little lost there for a bit, but I'm here.
6 million miles, Phil?
That's, 6 million
that's
miles.
That's what your bio says. 6 million air miles? Really?
You take the number of flight hours and you average.
And you average? We just lost you. And you
no,
average,
he's there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Phil, you there?
So. Yeah.
Okay. You take the number of air miles and do what?
Well, you take the total flight time and you multiply it by how fast each airplane kind of averages on a given day, and it comes up to 6 million miles.
Wow, that's a lot of
that's
hemorrhoids.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of box lunches.
No kidding.
So what kind of aircraft have you flown? What have been your favorite planes?
I started as, you know, just like everyone else does in a little Cessna, and I was in high school, and I always wanted to be a pilot, so as soon as I could start taking lessons, I did, and I got my private license when I was 17, and then just continued to fly, and I've flown Citation jets, which are kind of an entry-level airplane at the time, and ended up flying Bombardier Challenger airplanes, which are similar to the Gulfstreams I use in my books. They're big stand-up, walk-around, intercontinental range. They're nice. They're very nice. It's the way to go if you can afford it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if you can. There's the operative word. If you can afford it.
Yes. And needless to say, I'm not a very good airline passenger, having to sit in the back these days.
Oh,
so
I'm sure.
I did get spoiled.
Well, yeah, you got a great view from the cockpit.
Well, it's the best corner office in the world, I think.
Well, I would tend to agree with you. Well, and what made you wanted to start flying? I mean, a lot of kids, you know, their lofty ambitions are to, like, become accountants or...
Well,
nobody I know
would
become
president of the United
accountant.
States, you know.
Yeah.
To my grandfather, who was a farmer, and he had a little airplane, and he would take me up when I was a little boy, and he would just scare the dickens out of me, and then I couldn't wait to go do it again. So he planted the bug early on, and that was about it. I was just everything was airplanes with me. So I was pretty obsessive about it. And then in high school, I actually started writing, and that became the other obsession in my life. So I've kind of been stuck with. I didn't get to pick. They kind of picked me.
But your first book wasn't published until 2005. Is that what it says? 2005? 2004.
2004. Yeah, I was busy.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I had to take English 101 like we all did.
Yeah, and going ahead, English, sure.
One of the things I did was, one of the assignments was to write a magazine article. And I did. And the instructor gave me a B. And I was just incensed by this grade. So I submitted it to a magazine, and they published it, and they wrote me a check. So when I decided that it was time to leave school and go be a pilot instead of just wanting to be one, I promised myself that someday I would write a novel. And that was the deal I made with myself for leaving college before I graduated.
Gotcha.
So
and I, for 20 years, I was under the impression that writing was easy. You write stuff, and then you mail it in, and then money shows up in the mailbox.
Yeah, it magically appears.
Yeah. So the...
How foolish you are.
The experiences that you had as a young boy with your granddad wanting, you know, leaving you thrilled and wanting more, obviously that has translated into the airspace that you take us through as a writer, because you take us on how, you know, scary, darn scary, thrilling roller coaster rides in these planes. You had to be influenced by that as a kid, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? I was influenced by a lot of things early on that really do come into play in my writing. Mm-hmm. I read a lot. I was fortunate that my parents were big readers, and so a trip to the library as a kid was a big deal. And so when I started reading novels, there was a writer, Ernest K. Gann, who was a pilot and became a novelist, and he kind of lit the fire with me. He wrote Fate is the Hunter, High and the Mighty, Band of Brothers. There was just a lot of, they made movies. John Wayne was always in his movies, and so that sort of set the template for the, you know, let's see if we can keep the reader up past their bedtime.
You did that with me.
So that's kind of my job description. My job is to keep people up past their bedtime, and if they can read the airplane or read the books on an airplane, then they get extra credit with me.
Oh, well, yeah, that and the extra package of drugs to be able to do it. I was sitting in my recliner today. I was finishing your book, and I was at the very last part of the book when they're screaming in the 727 down on the asphalt.
Oh yeah.
And I'm thinking, holy crap! How many times have I thought, when we take off and land, okay, is this a survivable height?
and you're
putting a 727 10 feet off the ground.
Or the helicopter. Again, in that latter part of the book, Trevor,
at the, where all the chip lights are going off,
oh,
and the oil pressure's gone.
Coming up out of nowhere and landing on top of cars, and oh my goodness, I was almost getting nauseous trying to stay with that crew.
Bobby, as you can tell, is not one for the wonderful world of flying.
This is a very compelling story with engaging characters, great dialogue, crisp dialogue, really interesting characters. We got good guys and bad guys. We got Eastern Europe. We've got a woman. I got to say, thank you for writing strong women and putting three very strong women in this book. I like that. Dr. Laura, tell us about Lauren McKenna a little bit about her. Tell us about her.
Well, when I first started, like most writers, I didn't know I was writing a series when I wrote the first book. I didn't even know if I was ever going to be published. So, but I kind of knew that, you know, it's either go big or go home with thrillers. So as I kind of formed Donovan Nash, he was going to be a strong character. And that was my intention. And so I needed, and I actually think she's maybe even a stronger character. People love her. A lot of my women readers thank me for writing the Dr. Lauren McKenna series.
Well, yeah, she's a girl MacGyver.
Well, yeah, and thank you for giving her a strong partner, and that she's not a an enabler's not the word, but you know, she's got it. She's got the right kind of partner for the lifestyle that she has.
Right. Exactly. And so when I set off to start writing, you know, there's so much I don't know, and I lucked out in a lot of respects with some of my early choices, but I do like the alternating points of view. So we usually, typically in one of my books, you're going to have her point of view and his point of view, and they're not together very often. They're usually, you know, at opposite ends of the earth almost. And that's one of the biggest challenges.
He owns that big super secret aircraft company.
Econowatch.
Well,
right. And then she is, works for the DIA. So, I mean, she's off and gone half the time anyway.
Exactly. So they're just, you know, they're a modern couple just trying to make things work.
Oh, right. A modern couple.
Save the world at
the
same time.
Yeah, save the world with an adorable little girl, Abigail, that wants a horse. You know, just a normal family.
Normal family, just, you know.
Two working parents, you know.
More zeros in their bank account than you know. Yeah. Normal family.
So tell us a little bit more, about Donovan Nash. Who is this Donovan Nash character?
Well, he's kind of an enigma. I started off and I kind of knew what I wanted him to be, but then I think every great hero has to have a secret. So I started building on his secret, and I decided that he would have had a previous life. I mean, he would have been someone that was in the public eye and got publicly just vilified by things he didn't do, to the point where he had the money, he had the means to fake his death and start a new identity, start a new life, basically. And so that's his secret, and he desperately wants to hold on to this new life he's built because it's 10 times better than the old life he lived. So that's where the series opens, and we deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
He deals with that in the first 3 or 4 books, and then he kind of makes peace with it. And that allowed me to kind of move the series forward. And he's still trying to adjust. He's still got his demons, but you know, he's becoming a better person, and I think that growth is important in books. And Lauren, as smart as she is, she's not always, neither one of them are great at relationships, because I think we all know people like that are super smart and we love them, but they're just not, they're not great at that, and they're working on it, and we root for them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of and Donovan wants to give back, so he's founded this company called EcoWatch, and it's a nonprofit organization that's invested heavily in scientific research to try to save the planet from the people that inhabit it. So I get to use natural disasters in the mm-hmm. book, because that's where EcoWatch would be. So the first book is Category 5, and we deal with a hurricane. And then Code Black is the next book, and that's the highest level of snow emergency at Chicago O'Hare Airport.
I did not know that.
And so on and so forth. So, and Aftershock is the book with the volcano on the front of it. So they deal with, they're kind of in harm's way to begin with, just by who they are and what they do. And the series has just been a blast to write. And I'm working on number 8.
I liked that I come into the series in book 6 and yet don't feel, you know, you also write enough about their background that I don't feel that I had to go read the other 5 in order to have this one make sense. I think that's a challenge in a series, and this is deftly done. It makes me want to go read the other 5 because I really like these characters.
That's what we like to do. That's the I tell people they can jump in the pool anywhere, but it is a series, and the characters do grow, and I've grown. I mean, I'm a different. I mean, I started writing the series almost 20 years ago. So, you know, I've changed. They've changed. The series changes, and my publisher, bless their hearts, they really do. They really hold a high standard to their authors, mm-hmm. and so we do have to be careful and make it a standalone, and mm-hmm. not make the reader feel like, if they pick up book 6 or 7, that they're standing in somebody else's high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
They do have to be standalones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed also that you... Oh, we have a caller. Look
Ooh,
at that. My God.
A caller? Yay.
Phil, you have a caller.
How about that?
Hang tough. Just say it. Thanks for calling the Writer's Block. This is Jim.
Hi, Jim. It's Carolyn Howard Johnson.
Oh,
how are you?
Oh, my gosh, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
How are you?
I'm you know I'm your greatest fan.
Well, you're one of them.
Joan Stewart calls people like me super fans.
There you go. Well, you certainly are one of ours. That's for sure.
Yeah, I just needed my writing upper is all is what I needed.
Oh. Have you been listening to Phil?
I haven't been listening to Phil. I listened to a first lady who delivered a speech that I think will probably go down in history.
Oh, I listened to that this morning.
Yeah, she was. They just played it in full on Rachel Maddow's show. So I would have called in earlier and listened, but you know, I kind of got caught up in that. What can I tell you?
Well, you that's what you can tell us. We have Phil Donnelly on. We have Phil Donnelly on the line with us, and he's a terrific suspense and spy and
thriller
writer.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. And from Los Angeles.
And no, he's actually from
Michigan, but he's
Michigan,
calling from
Montana,
from Washington.
Oh, well, we'll accept him. We've got a lot of people from those areas in this town, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do.
We can always make room for one more.
We do.
Yeah. I didn't need to interrupt.
That's okay.
I was going to call him. Okay.
We always love to hear from you.
Well, it was nice dropping in, and I'm glad to meet you, Phil.
Oh wait, I don't think he can hear you.
Oh, no.
No, you didn't. I haven't merged your calls. Not yet.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for the call, Carolyn.
Tell him hi for me. We communicated a little bit on Facebook, but I think we kind of lost each other. So, no worries. This works a lot better.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Always. Bye-bye.
Carolyn Howard Johnson.
Carolyn Howard Johnson. And, you automatically cut out, Phil.
Okay.
But she thought she was talking to you, but she wasn't. That's okay.
Okay.
She's our frugal minute gal. She'll call in with frugal ideas.
A great writer, and also this wonderful series on how to market your book and how to get your book published and edit your book. And she's just a terrific resource for authors.
She really truly is. She's really a great gal.
Yeah, poet also.
She said that you guys hooked up on Facebook for a while and then kind of lost each other. So.
Oh, the nature of Facebook.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, everybody, you hook up with everybody on Facebook eventually.
Exactly.
I think, Jim, you had a question.
I actually had a comment. And my comment was, as I was reading your book, and I was thinking, okay, Eastern Europe, and then their airplane goes down in a river.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then she's running all over the place on the bank of the river, and she's trying to get away from these guys. And
she's so smart.
Oh my God, she is just like intelligent person. But then guess what shows up? And this has to show up in every Eastern European movie, book: a barge. A barge. I'm so glad, Phil, you got a barge in there.
I had a barge full of cars. Which was even more fun.
And I was thinking, oh my God, there has to be a barge. By God, there is a barge.
Well, the whole storyline, but of Pegasus Dam, when I was still flying, and I retired in 2008. Our corporate office, I was a corporate pilot, so I flew private jets, and the company I flew for, our European office was in Budapest. So I spent a lot of time there, and I spent a lot of downtime there. So I would sit at the hotel, which is right overlooking the Danube, where Trevor was doing all of his helicopter tricks.
Right.
And and I just always thought, you know, it's like, God, this is such a beautiful place, and it's such an interesting country and city. There's got to be a story here. There's got to be a Donovan Nash thriller that fits into this scenario. And Pegasus Down is that. And because the bridges are all so low, everything's a barge.
Yes,
exactly
right.
You can't find a regular sized boat.
Even the river cruise boats are low. The cruise ships are low.
Yeah, they have to be.
Yeah.
And it was fun to kind of, that's my Pegasus Down is my tip of the hat to all of the spy novels I grew up reading, the Alistair MacLeans, the Ludlums, the Cold War. You know, I liked all those books, and I liked those I like that adversarial. It's not just men, it's countries.
Right.
And so this was kind of my dipping my toe in that pool for a little bit.
Well, you did good.
It was thank you.
Very interesting book. And full of excitement. I mean, you know, when my toes get tingling when I'm sitting there in my recliner, you've done good.
Thank you.
And that could be because my legs were falling asleep, but then, you know, but.
You obviously, you're an experienced pilot, everything that you've shared. Was there anything as you wrote this book that suddenly was revealed to you that was kind of new and different, or research that you had to do about flying or helicopter, you know, anything that surprised you as you were writing this?
Well, I had to. I'm not a helicopter pilot. I have flown. I flew one sort of on a dare once, and I didn't enjoy it very much. I had a friend who was a helicopter pilot, and he was also an airplane pilot. He had ratings on both, and so he told me to be at the airport. He was going to come pick me up, and we were going to go for lunch. And to my horror, he showed up in the helicopter. And we took off, and they're just unnatural. They're just shaking, and they just nothing about them translates to flying jets.
But you can't back up in case you hit a mountain.
there's some upside to them, but so, and then he just looked over. He just said, "He says you've got the controls," and he just crossed his arms.
Oh my!
And I had to fly this helicopter.
Was it before you ate or after?
This is before. And so I actually know a little bit about. I mean, I know the mechanics and just enough to
crash.
To not crash immediately, maybe eventually. So when I'm writing this, I have to. Trevor has to do some clever things and some pretty complicated maneuvers. So I spent a lot of time on the phone with people that know how to do it. And so that was very interesting and kind of living in the helicopter pilot's world for a little bit as I tried to make that as realistic for helicopter pilots reading it than it is for people reading and pilots reading the airplane part, which I do know how to do. So the helicopter part was interesting. The 727 part, I've never flown a 727, so there are things I didn't know they could do, and that airplane sort of singled itself out as the one that they were going to acquire because of some of the things it could do. Mm-hmm. So I learned stuff on all the books. The research is one of the things I like, and doing the logistics. I like planning all the logistics so everybody is standing on their mark when they need to be in the story. So the research is key, and the research is fun.
Have you found that as you've gone from novel number one to novel now number seven? Seven is completed. That the times have changed enough where you have to go back and research what you're doing with the aircraft, and or do you keep up enough on flying to be able to keep up with what is going on with the modern day aircraft,
the technology and
right.
satellites and satellite phones?
Yeah,
you know,
I do. I was flying at the tail end of my career with the fully automated flight decks and the auto throttles, and it was startling to see the kind of how little the pilot was actually manipulating the controls.
Right.
We're more computer programmers now, but so I kind of avoid some of that because that's boring. If all Donovan Nash had to do was push a button, then there's not much drama in that.
Right.
So I do have to research, but the thing I have to research the most, and this is almost embarrassing to admit, but I have to research my own books because it's a series. So anything I wrote in book one is written in stone.
Right.
And I don't always remember what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So
that makes sense.
I have to go back and it's like, well, if I wonder where did Donovan go to school? And there I am. And I have to go back and research my own stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Well, that's a good question. Where did Phil Donnelly go to school? Where did Phil Donnelly grow up?
Phil Donnelly grew up in Kansas, in Wichita, Kansas.
Okay. So far.
And I learned to fly in Wichita, and I went to North High School, and I started Wichita State and didn't stay very long, and went to a flight school in Colorado and graduated from there. And by the time I was 19 years old, I was a flight instructor teaching people how to fly. And by the time I was 20, I had a job flying for a sheikh in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
At 20 years old.
At 20
years old. And that was my first jet job. So I've been flying jets since I was 20.
I'm going to skip now in a little bit into process. Is that okay, Jim?
Absolutely.
You've been with the same publisher for a long time. How did you find that publisher?
Well, there's two phases of my writing career. There was the early, not published, not going to be anytime soon. And then there was the published, and then I took some time off and I needed a new publisher. So that the final section is with Ocean View, this publisher now, where that I'll have done 6 books with. So I'm lucky enough to have this wonderful agent. Kimberly Cameron is her name, and she has stuck with me through thick and thin, and she believed in me, and that we just kept hammering away at it. But so there was the time writing was sort of a hobby as I was still flying full time.
Mm-hmm.
To the part now where writing is what I do all the time.
So what's your typical writing day like then, since you're writing full time? What's your day like?
Well, there's different phases of that too. My publishing schedule is I have a book coming out every March. First Tuesday in March is my release date that my target. So what that means is that on March 1st you find me on book tour, and so I travel, I do book signings, I do radio, I do lots of things. Mm-hmm. And to promote.
Do we lose
and,
you?
And I have time to meet my writers and my readers, and I enjoy that part. And then June 1st is when I like to be somewhere quiet, preferably in Montana, near a river, trout stream, and that's when I start writing the new book.
Mm-hmm. And fly
so
fish.
And
different kind of.
I'm
going
to go out on a limb here and say that the fly fishing is an intrinsic part of this process.
Uh-huh.
So I get up in the morning and I start writing, and I write till lunchtime, and then I'll kind of have a little working lunch, and then I'll stop at a good point. Do any research that I need to do for the next day or just whatever, and then I go fish. And the fishing allows me to kind of get out of my head and give my subconscious a chance to sort of take a deep breath and fix problems that it sees that I haven't seen yet. And then by the time I'm done fishing, it's happy hour. So
God bless you, Phil.
So, and you just repeat as necessary until there's a rough draft.
Yeah, I like that, repeat as necessary or as long as needed.
Not necessarily exactly. The happy hour, it's the process.
It could be happy afternoon, happy day.
That's right, it doesn't matter. But so there's, and it takes anywhere from 3 to 5 months of that to get a rough draft. And I try to do it, you know, there's a continuity and there's just a flow that I think, you know, the faster you can write or the quicker you can get through the rough draft, then starts the real process, which is the rewrites.
Sure.
So so sometime around this time of year, you know, I have a rough draft that I maybe haven't seen it because I don't go back. When I write, I'd start on page one. And I don't go back. Uh-huh. I just keep pushing forward. And so I'll get to British Columbia sometime next week, which is kind of where I go when Montana gets too cold. And I'll print the thing out and sit down with it. And it's the first time I've seen some of it since June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
and start going through it and fixing it and fixing it and fixing it. And hopefully by January, there's something to turn into my agent, and then it goes to the publisher, and that's the plan. Something always gets in the way.
Do you self?
That's the rough plan.
Do you self edit?
You know, I do for a little bit. I'm not very good at that.
Uh-huh.
I'm good for like two passes, and then I'm just changing stuff back the way it probably was the first time.
Yeah.
So it's time to hand it off to somebody else with fresh eyes, which is my agent.
Yeah,
so she goes through it, and then the publisher does their thing, and numerous people get their fingers on it. But you know, they ultimately make it a better book, so that's good for me.
And you're happy with the results that you get back from your agent and your publisher?
Well, they're just genius at times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just see things, and you know, they're real respectful. They don't change stuff. You know, they won't change a comma without asking me. And they'll say, well, you know, what about this? Or you know, did you think about this? And they'll find that they're. You can't write a 95,000 word story and not have some inconsistencies.
Sure.
And I don't catch them, but they do. And then the really scary people, the proofreaders, they get it. Just blows my mind.
Yeah, those are the ones with the yellow eyes and green teeth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They sit there and they're like, you know, on chapter two, there was this, you know, when Donovan did this, it indicated that he might be left-handed, but on the rest of the book, it seems apparent that he's right-handed. And I'm like,
I love him.
Wow. I know.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's something to think about.
Well, yeah.
He's right-handed, mm-hmm. like I am.
Oh, I see. Well, he's ambidextrous. Move on.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a question that we ask every single one of our writers.
Okay.
This is called a writer's block. Have you ever had writer's block?
You know, I gave that some thought, and it's a good question because I don't know that I've ever been asked that. But when I knew I was going to be on the writer's block, I thought,
oh. Smart man.
I have to say no. I've had lack of ambition. I've had lack of motivation. I find that if I'm hesitant or stuck, it's kind of my subconscious's way of telling me that what I'm trying to write about isn't working.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually a positive thing. Because if I'm not super excited, you know, and if I'm not just clicking away on the keys, then there's possibly a problem.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's one of the lessons I've had to learn as a writer is to stop and listen to the voices. Because sometimes they're whispering things to you and they're not very loud, but you need to listen. And so if I come to a point where I'm uncertain, and I think maybe that might be the definition of writer's block, but I view that as a positive thing in that the universe is telling me that I'm going down the wrong path. I need to stop and pay attention and look at what I'm trying to write.
Hmm.
And then once I'm on the path, it's clickety clack clack on the keyboard again.
I don't know that we've had that explanation
no.
before. And we've had a lot of explanations.
We need to gather them together into a book.
I love the ones that are terse. No.
Yeah, no, what is that?
Writer's block, it's all BS. No.
It is an interesting question.
But I think,
creative process.
Well, I think a lot of it's preparation. I mean, I know writers that don't outline, and that boggles my mind. I have to outline at least to the point. I have to know where I'm headed. I don't always follow.
I was just going to ask that question.
I don't always follow the route, but I do have to have my books are technical enough that I have to have done some proof of concept and to make sure that some of the things I want to do are possible.
Yeah.
And that they're possible within the time frame I want it to happen.
Yeah.
So I have a fair idea of what's going to happen, what needs to happen. So I think in the preparation you can avoid some of the writer's block.
Well, I think you're probably right.
Has anybody expressed interest in filming your stories? Because I could sure see
you know,
this on the big screen.
I was, after I wrote my second book, Code Black. That was my second book as what I would term as an amateur, because I was still flying. But it was nominated for a Minnesota Book Award. I didn't win, but that was kind of cool. And then my agent optioned the film rights, and the producers wanted me to work on the screenplay. Mm. So that was fun, and you know, I got to write a screenplay, and I got to. There were some things that I tried to put in the book that my editor and publisher didn't like, and so I tried to reinsert some of that back in there, and it got kicked out again. So it was a fun little exercise. The option, they floated around. Nobody wrote a check, so the option expired. So currently there is a treatment making the rounds. I worked with a group in England on turning the series into a television series.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Episodic TV is just such a huge market right now.
Oh, it's ginormous.
Yeah, so there were some people that are working on that. So I taught myself how to write a treatment. They sent me a few that had turned into blockbuster TV series and said, yeah, just kind of follow, get an idea of what these guys do and then just do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat in a hotel room in Kansas City and wrote a treatment for the book. So there's always interest. It seems like people are always, you know, nibbling around and maybe someday. Though I haven't met a lot of authors that that will tell you that it's been the most satisfying experience of their career.
No.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword, probably.
Other than Dale Jackson.
It's just interesting because we see all kinds of remakes of things, and I think there's got to be fresh material. We don't. Why do we keep remaking great, you know, movies that were classics? Go see the original, and why don't we have just fresh, you know, fresh storylines and fresh characters? And as I read this book, I felt like sometimes if I were listening to it, if it was audible and I could close my eyes, I could envision it on a big screen. I mean, I could see what it would be like as a viewer watching it unfold. And
that's interesting, because that's how I write. I mean, I write, I'm a very visual writer. I picture it as something real and three-dimensional, and then I just kind of freeze it. Mm-hmm. And then I can kind of pull the details out and write it down and try to make you feel like you're there. So that's nice to hear that the visual element is there for you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You got me.
Absolutely. But one thing you have to do with your movies, if you ever get made into a movie, especially Pegasus Down, when you buy your ticket, they need to give you a menu of who the people are. Because you get so lost into who is who. And
yeah, I got Margo and Montero mixed up a couple
times. Yeah, me too.
Isn't that the same person?
Oh, yeah. You know, Montero's been around for a while. And then when it came time to have the Marta character, and I wrestled with this, and for good reason. But when I was flying to Europe all the time, I met a girl that lived in Warsaw, and she was a pilot for LOT at the time, and we hung out, and she'd take me around, and she came to Budapest one time, and we did the tourist thing. Her name was Marta. So I couldn't hardly, and I still talk to her, so I couldn't hardly not name that character Marta, or I was going to be in big trouble.
So the
Marta Montero is confusing, and we can blame that on me just trying to save my skin.
Oh, okay. That's okay. They're great women.
Hey, look, in the time we've got left, which is very, very limited, you want to tell our listeners where they can contact you, your website address, Facebook, blah, 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 blah.
I'm on all of those. Amazon is the quickest place to find me, probably, and it's Philip Donnelly, and Pegasus Down is the book we've been talking about.
Right.
And type that in, and that'll go to the author page. There, all the books are there. You can read the reviews. My website you can find from there. The books are on Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, iTunes. They're all, except for the latest one, they're all in either Audible or paperbacks by now.
Uh-huh.
So they're all still in print, which is great. Thank you, readers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm easy to find, and if you contact me through my website, then there's links to do that. I see those. So, and I respond to everyone.
Okay. So you heard it here first.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you reading now? That's my last question. What are you reading now?
I've been reading this book, Seconds to Midnight, by Philip Donnelly, that's coming out that I just finished.
You lucky man to have it an advanced proof copy.
You know, we just happen to have talked to that guy.
Yeah, he's great. You should have him come to a book talk.
One of the sad parts about finally being a full-time writer is that what has taken the biggest hit is my reading.
Well, I'm sure.
I used to read all the time, and that's kind of one of the casualties. So yeah. Once I'm done writing, then I can go back to reading.
There you go.
And I have my stack.
Okay, well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Writer's Block. It's been an absolute hoot having you.
Well, thank you. Bobby and Jimmy have been great, and great questions, and it was just a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much. And you know what? Tell all your friends. You know, our million plus listeners, it grows every week.
It does. And post on the Writer's Block Facebook page when you have news about anything that you think could be of interest. And definitely as the next book is, you know, ready to come out and such, please keep in touch with us there.
And if you would send me an address where I can send you something. You can email it to me at jimchristina@yahoo.com, and I will be sending you a Writer's Block mug.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It's a very cool mug. It's actually a very cool mug. We have a couple pictures of them up on our website. So, all right. Okay. Thanks again for the time, Phil, and thanks for being around to answer our phone call and answer our questions and just thrill us with your book. We love the book.
Keep writing.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate it very much.
Take care, my friend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Philip K. Donnelly. Nice guy.
I got to read the others.
Oh, man.
I don't have time.
You're going to go to bed one of these nights, and you're going to have to move aside 12 tons of books just so you can climb under the covers. next week, we have with us, by phone, of course, she's in St. Louis, Missouri, Caroline Giamanco, who wrote the book, the real story of the Boonie Hat Bandit,
mm-hmm.
Talking about
bank
the bank notes. Robbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and her.
It's a great story.
It's a good story, and
yep.
She was a teacher in the prison where mm-hmm. he is, and mm-hmm. and they fell in love. And
not fiction. This is
a true story.
This is a true story.
And the week following is Chelsea Hickman. She is a young playwright. She is now going to school at UCR. Riverside, and she's just won an award for one-act plays. And she's going to be a playwright, and I haven't read her stuff yet, but I'm sure I'm going to. I guess the name of her one show that she won an award for is Mercy Meal.
Oh.
And she'll be in studio with us on the 27th. Russ will not be here, so I'm
good. And I'll be at our concert.
And you'll be at your concert series. So.
But her
mother-in-law and her husband will be here, so we should have a good
night. Oh, it'll be a great show.
Yeah, it'll be a fun show. And Bobby Jean, so good to see you again. I was missing you.
We were missing you.
I was missing being here.
Yeah, and you look great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see.
And but that being said, I guess we're done with another show of the Writer's Block, and we close on another Thursday night. Thank you for listening, and y'all have a good week, and we will be back with you next Thursday, 7 p.m. We'll be right back.